Welcome back to our series we're calling Revival Arrival. We're looking at how to revive our faith in a number of different areas where it's easy to become a little unbelieving or somewhat doubtful. So far, we've talked about coming to a deeper faith that God can heal us, bring us a fresh new vision, take us to new levels, and perform mighty works and miracles in our lives. Today, I want to talk with you about greater love is coming. We all need love. As the first reading points out, it's not good for us to be alone. We need loving relationships, people who will care for us, nurture us, guard our hearts, and make us feel special like the masterpiece God created us to be. In every stage and circumstance of life, we also need people to love. We need to love others and lift them up, encourage them, defend their cause, make them feel special, and help them pursue their best lives and the dreams God has put on their hearts. Love is the most powerful force on earth, and to be loved and to love others is what makes life meaningful. But sometimes relationships can sour, things go wrong, misunderstandings, betrayals, lack of support. A friend or a loved one doesn't come through in a crisis. They let you down. A friend goes behind your back and does something devious. A coworker undermines you. A spouse is unfaithful. An adult child suddenly cuts you out of their lives for no particular reason that you can discern. When that happens, it's easy to get angry, to harden our hearts, even to give up on the relationship. It's natural to want to get back at that person, take revenge, give them the cold shoulder, the silent treatment, a taste of their own medicine. We often say to ourselves, I don't need them anyway. It's good riddance. But good relationships take hard work, especially when they become strained. Problems arise. Things go wrong. And when we harden our hearts, it only makes things worse. Both people in the relationship end up isolating themselves from each other. It's a protective mechanism. We're trying to protect ourselves. We think that if we harden our hearts, then they can't hurt us again. And they will see how upset we are, feel bad about the way they treated us, come around and apologize in the end. The problem is, it doesn't work. If you want a loving relationship, you have to soften your heart when things go wrong. Forgive the other person. Forgive them. Let go of the grudge. Let go of the grudge and not allow that poison to kill the relationship and to destroy your own happiness. For the last 10 years, I have been involved in an international Catholic ministry known as Retrovi. It's for married couples who are struggling in their faith. Despite the hope and joy they had on their wedding day, their marriages came on hard times. And the problems they face usually lead to disillusionment and many times even a sense of misery, a feeling of misery in their marriage. And couples who go through this generally stop talking to each other, except to make plans for the kids. Who's going to pick them up from soccer practice? Who's going to take them to school? Who's going to do this or that, cook dinner? What does happen is that couples begin leading their own lives, pursuing their own interests. And like two ships in the night, it seems like the love they once had is lost forever. Now they just go through the day as co-parents or roommates. In the ministry, Retrovi, we have a term for these couples. We call them Friday night couples. It's not to be critical or disparaging. We love them and we want to help them. We call them Friday night couples because, quite simply, they begin our three-day weekend experience late in the afternoon on a Friday night. They come and they sit together, but you could cut the tension in the room with a knife. The body language is unmistakable. Brows are furrowed, arms are crossed. There's a lot of rolling of eyes going on. You can see how difficult it is for them. They have hardened their hearts and it's heartbreaking to watch. In the gospel reading today, Jesus addresses the challenging topic of divorce. And for those of us who have been through a breakup like that, it can bring back painful memories, feelings of hurt and anger, guilt and shame. Guilt and shame and hurt and anger, all kinds of negative feelings. And the words that Jesus uses seem kind of harsh. It's like he's blaming the divorce people for what happened. But what you have to understand is that Jesus was responding to a challenge from the Pharisees, men with hardened hearts themselves. They were trying to test Jesus by getting him to comment on a controversial topic like divorce that would make him unpopular with the crowds and undermine his ministry. They asked him what the law of Moses allowed when it came to divorce. Jesus turned it around on them. He asked them, "What does the law say?" They responded, "Moses permitted a husband to write a bill of divorce and dismiss his wife." In fact, they were right. Chapter 24 of the book of Deuteronomy allowed a husband to divorce his wife by writing out a legal document called a bill of divorce, handing it to her when he became displeased with her and found something, quote, indecent in her. The law was ambiguous as to what that meant, indecent. And for centuries, the rabbis argued over the proper grounds for divorce. Some said burning the dinner was displeasing and indecent enough. Others said it had to be more serious. But either way, the law was one-sided. It did not allow a woman to divorce her husband. That's the way it was. So they asked Jesus, "What's your interpretation of this?" They're trying to bait him, but he doesn't take the bait. He refuses to become embroiled in their legal debate. Instead, Jesus got to the heart of the matter. He said, looking at the men, he said, "Moses permitted divorce because of the hardness of your hearts." And to make his point, Jesus went back to the way God had intended things to be from the very beginning. In the first reading, God created Adam, the first man, named him Adam, and then decided that he was going to make a companion for him. First, God showed him all the birds of the sky, the wild animals, the cattle in the fields. But as should be obvious, the passage points out, none proved to be the suitable partner for the man. Adam needed someone more like him, someone who could think, speak, and relate in the same way. God cast a deep sleep on Adam so that he would not interfere with the process and try to control the situation or resist what God was going to do or tell God how to do it. And when Adam was asleep, God took a rib from his rib cage and formed a woman out of it. And when Adam woke up, he was greatly pleased. She was smart, intelligent, well-spoken, friendly, and beautiful. The perfect partner in every way. That was the first relationship, the first marriage, and everything was the way it should be. The scripture says that the man, Adam, clung to his wife as equals. He needed her in every way. And the two flesh became one. But pretty soon, problems came. They were tempted by a serpent, and they ended up disobeying the only rule God gave. They ate fruit from the one tree that was off limits. When God confronted them about this, they both refused to take responsibility. Adam said, "The woman you put me here with, she gave me the fruit from the tree, so I ate it." Adam blamed his wife. And he had the gall to pass the buck to God for putting her in his life in the first place. The woman did the same thing. She accused the serpent of tempting her. They were both playing the blame game. There were serious consequences for their disobedience, one of which was that their relationship would become strained, challenged from time to time. And God said to the woman, you will desire to control your husband, but he will rule over you. It's important to understand that wasn't what God wanted. It was the natural consequences of their disobedience and their refusal to take responsibility. Instead of the peace, joy, love, equality, and mutual respect they had in their relationship, they would now struggle. From that day forward, their hearts could easily be hardened against one another. This is why we still often struggle in any type of relationship today, marriages, friendships, any type of relationship. It's so tempting to get sour over the wrong someone has done to us and harden our hearts against that person. Relationships can be so fragile sometimes, right? One misstep can end a lifelong friendship. A single misunderstanding can unravel a rapport that took so long to build. A harsh word can ruin a romance in the making. One wrong move can send people you thought were on your side running for the hills. Years ago, in one of my former parishes, I was very close to a family. They lived near the church, and they invited me over for dinner several times a month. They also included me in family celebrations and holiday get-togethers. We were very close, and we had wonderful conversations and good times together. But one Sunday at Mass, I said something kind of stupid. I know you can never imagine me doing that, but I did. I was kind of cracking a joke about something. I didn't think it through very well. I didn't mean it to be come out the way that it did. I just wasn't thinking. It was a quick comment, but they took great offense. It wasn't about them or anything having to do with them, but they decided to cut all ties with me. The man, the husband, texted me and said they were now going to go to a different church and they never wanted to see me again. I felt so bad. I kept apologizing over and over. I'm so sorry. I really didn't mean it. I just kept falling over myself apologizing. But they said it was no use to try to fix things. They had already made up their minds. They had hardened their hearts. If you want healthy relationships, strong family bonds, a loving marriage, camaraderie at work, close friendships that last, and good spirit among the people around you, the key is to soften your heart when something goes wrong. Give people a break. We're all imperfect. It's important to try to forgive, somehow forgive. Get past the pain. Give the person another chance. Forget about the past. And it's also important to acknowledge whatever part you may have played in the conflict. The couples who lead that Retrovi weekend experience I told you about for struggling married couples, they always share their stories in their talks and presentations. And those couples have been through some of the worst misery in their marriages you could imagine. Adultery, addiction, domestic violence, depression, anger, shouting, name-calling, even self-harm. But these couples experienced a renewal, a restoration, a rebirth in their relationships because they took the risk of forgiving each other and trying again, even several times again. The story of Tony and Lolette is one of the most profound, in my opinion, and every time they tell it, I am deeply moved. After Tony's multiple affairs, Lolette had given up on the relationship. She hardened her heart like a stone. She was filled with bitterness and resentment. Tony, on his part, felt justified in his actions. He refused to apologize. He just wanted what he wanted, and he didn't care what happened to the marriage. It seemed the next stop was divorce court. But then they came to the Retrovi weekend, and by the end of it, they found hope again. During the weekend, Lolette's heart began to open ever so slightly. As she was listening to the talks, she decided to take a chance. She gave Tony a white rose on that weekend, and she said that it was a sign that she was ready to surrender her anger. She wanted a future with him after all. Little by little, she began to forgive, and turning it over to God, she was able to soften her heart. When that happened, Tony did the same thing, and the ice between them began to melt. They experienced a revival in their faith and in their relationship. And today they have one of the strongest marriages I've ever seen. For the last 20 years, they have been leading these Retrovi weekends, giving hope to other struggling couples. Every Sunday afternoon on those weekends, there's a change in the atmosphere in the room. The atmosphere changes. Most of those couples who came in so angry on Friday night, leave on Sunday holding hands, their arms around each other, a softer gaze in their eyes. They're gentler with each other. You can just see it. It's not a quick fix. There's a lot more work to be done. The program, there's a lot more in the program. But for the first time, you can see that there's hope. And I love these Sunday afternoons on these weekends because hurting couples have found a way to begin to soften their hearts. We all have relationships that hurt sometimes. It's tempting to want to give up, walk away, decide to go it alone, say we don't need that other person. But whether it's a marriage or a friendship, a parent-child, or other kind of relationship, we can't do life alone. And yes, it's very important to acknowledge that some circumstances, some situations are so severe, so abusive, you have to move on. And for those of us who have gone through a divorce, I want you to know that God loves you. He's not mad at you. He doesn't hate you because of what happened to you. He loves you, and he's opening doors right now for you. He's bringing greater things into your life right now if he hasn't already. So let go of the shame and guilt if you're still holding on to that. But for the rest of us today who maybe haven't gone through that but are struggling in a relationship today, right now, whatever it may be, a friendship or a marriage or a coworker or something like that, my message for you today is to try to soften your heart, surrender your anger, seek to forgive. If you do that, you will see new hope, revival in the relationship, and greater love ahead.